Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and joined on the line by Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post, who's helping us think through so many of the news items of the day. And Brandon, I was pretty interested in the article that you released around some transgender conversation happening in the United Kingdom. And I'd be curious for you to just sort of summarize for our listeners. I think part of what I find fascinating is that, you know, we make some decisions to begin to embrace new ways of life, new ways of being together, whether it's same-gender marriage or transgenderism, but then the rippling implications of that almost seem like they have no end to them. And now we're talking about fertility treatments for people that are transitioning their gender. So talk us through what's happening here.
It boggles the mind. What's going on in the UK is that last month, actually it would have been August now, there was the government watchdog threatened to sue the National Healthcare Service for declining to offer fertility treatments to persons who identify as trans. The reasoning is that they said it's discriminatory for persons who identify as trans to not be able to have the right to start a family of their own, and so, but pre-transition, because the treatments that people undergo to become the opposite sex, I mean, that's physically impossible, but it sterilizes them. And so for women, they want their eggs extracted, or for men, their sperm to be stored. And I mean, it's just so irrational. But then last month in September, they followed through with that lawsuit. They threatened that, and then they went through. Meanwhile, the British government, the National Health Service, said that they misplaced their fire, and they're currently going through, you know, cuts, but financial cuts in their government. And so fertility treatments are really, for anybody who's gone through that, it doesn't always work. You know, gamete extraction, all this stuff, it's very expensive, and it really doesn't work very much. But the whole idea that you would think that it's discriminatory for not allowing people, before they go through a process that will sterilize them and unable to be fertile, they think they are somehow entitled to treatment so that they can have kids. It's as though kids, as children, are a commodity, and that you should do something really unethical to your body, and then somehow think that you're entitled to. I just stumble around because it's just so warped. At the root of this is a really toxic anthropology. It's this really warped view of the human person. So people are sterilizing themselves through going through these treatments and then still thinking that because they are transgender, they have a right to start a family. But when you adopt a view of the human person like that, I guess it makes sense in its own strange way. But, yeah, that's what's going on in Britain. It's really quite unsettling, to put it very mildly.
And it certainly does point out the idea that when we begin to take matters into our own hands in our lives and make decisions on our own outside of the way the kingdom is it does lead to these just ongoing rippling implications. There really isn't peace that's available at the end of it.
That's exactly right. And moreover, I mean, it boggles my mind also that we're not raising heck about people are being sterilized. You know, that's eugenics, anybody? I mean, really, a lot of these people who go in under, you know, transition, a lot of them now are minors, they're taking hormones and they're undergoing surgical procedures at younger and younger ages, and they're sterilized. I mean, that's a scandal. But yet people think that if they are the opposite sex, they have a right to do that, and they also desire kids, so they think they have a right to start a family. It just totally flips everything upside down and inside out. And I hope that in a few years we're going to see lawsuits of people who realized that what was done to their bodies, particularly when they were younger, that they didn't have the full, you know, cognitive capacity to make the kinds of decisions that they thought were going to benefit themselves. I hope we're going to see a lot of people sue these. I hate to even call them doctors who are doing this to people, because we used to be horrified at the notion of sterilizing, you know, black people, or sterilizing, you know, people who are mentally retarded. That used to be scandalous thing. Well, it needs to be today for people who are gender dysphoric. I mean, it's wrong to do that. Medically, speaking on a level of medical ethics, we do not need to be sterilizing people.
Yeah, it is well said. I know that there are some headlines coming out of Russia about one of the most prominent sex reassignment surgeons in Russia said that he was going to be done practicing that kind of procedure because he saw it as abusive of the children. So, I do hope that we see sort of a swing back in some of these things. Be curious.
It cannot happen soon enough.
Yeah, exactly. There's our kids are, you know, Brandon, I teach, obviously, and the young people. There's just such confusion over these last 3 years because of that topic. So it is hopefully what we can hope for is a pendulum swing back into a different direction.
I welcome that 100%.
Well, there's a few other good news items in that you've wrote about or covered there at the Christian Post. One of them I was intrigued with is the idea that an entire ethno-religious group, the Coptic Christians, are being considered for the Nobel Peace Prize. Talk us through what's happening there.
Well, the Coptic Christians have been, through suffering that we have not, I think, fully appreciated. Just in Egypt especially, they have known what it is like to suffer for Christ in a way that few in the West have. So they are being considered for the Nobel Peace Prize. It is a, so much of biblical history is born out of Egypt. You know, Jesus, we know the story of how he escaped Herod's wrath by going to Egypt. The Coptics are being nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, I think, for their witness. For their peaceful witness and their work there in Egypt, and they are, all your listeners need to read up on what the Copts have endured in the last decade, really, because they have been targeted many, many times, and yet they're about approximately, if I'm not mistaken, about 10% of the Egyptian population, and they are a strong people who love the Lord, and they know what it means to suffer for Christ.
It'd be fascinating to watch, see what happens there. And as you said, I think as Christians in the States, where we sometimes fear our voices being persecuted or not heard, when there's actual persecution and people dying for their faith, to come around them in that way, we can pray even for the sort of the highlighting of their experience through the Peace Prize. Brandon, we have just about a minute left or so here. Give us a little sense of what's happening with this prayer event and this tent event as well, because this is some more hopeful news.
Well, it just finished. This was an amazing thing, and I thought, what perfect providential divine timing. It started Thursday night, same night as the Kavanaugh hearings, where on the grounds of every state capitol and at hundreds of college campuses, there was 50 hours of unbroken intercession and worship that took place at every state capitol grounds for 50 hours through Friday and through most of Saturday. The idea, and this was planned last year during the Feast of Tabernacles, praying for a great awakening, praying for Jesus to be revealed, for his worth to be put on display. Certainly, I do know there were some pro-life groups that were praying for this drama in the Supreme Court, but this is just about seeking the face of the Lord and praying for his spirit to be poured out. And I mean, I'll say it again. What divine timing, given all that our country was going through last week, all of the bitter acrimony that was going on in our politics. I think that was just fingerprints of God all over that, that at the same time where we're being just rocked by this political drama, there are people, groups, traditions, people from all denominations coming together in every city where it's the seat of government power, contending for God to break through and move in our land. I just thought that was amazing.
Yeah, it's so hopeful, Brandon. It is consistent with the quote that I read at the beginning of our show, that we live as resurrection people in between Easter and the final day. And so as we do our worship and mission, it's a sign of Easter and a foretaste of the world to come. And that tent experience really was that on behalf of our world. So, hey, thanks for joining us. We got to wrap up our time here, but we sure appreciate your perspective. We love to send people to the Christian Post as a place where we can have actual news, intelligent conversations from a Christian standpoint.
Well, we appreciate you, Peter, and we appreciate you sending them to us.
Have a great week, Brandon. Look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you, Peter. Have a great day.
Yeah. Take a break here for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News, and when we come back for the second half of our first hour, I'll be joined by Ruth Kramer of Mission Network News, and we'll cover some of the global headlines related to Christianity.
This is Lighten Up with Ken Davis, brought to you by Compassion International. Lighten Up is the medicine you need for the rest of your day. I'm Dr. Wes Stafford with comedian, author, and motivational speaker Ken Davis, asking you to lighten up and consider the perplexing paradox of the Christian life.
We're to offer our bodies as a, and I love this, living sacrifice. A living sacrifice. Now, friends, there are two words that don't go together. Living sacrifice. They don't go together. It's like pretty ugly. Those words don't go together. Jumbo shrimp. Those words don't go together. Living sacrifice. There weren't a lot of sheep that came back from the sacrifice. None of them came back. I'll guarantee you, you would never find a sheep going,
I was at the sacrifice last night. They chose me. Oh, I'm a little burned out, but other than that...
You know what? There's nothing attractive about a dead sacrifice. It smells, it's repellent, it is capable of nothing. But the kind of living sacrifice Paul talked about in Romans 12 is full of life and vitality. It is dead center in the will of God and full of the power of the Spirit. The legalistic Pharisees were dead sacrifices, mired in the letter of the law. The disciples were living sacrifices, world changers, who showed us how to lighten up and live.
This has been Lighten Up, brought to you by Compassion International. Please visit us on the web at compassion.com.
Well, some parts of North Dakota are waking up to some snow this morning. That's right. I used the word snow. I apologize for that. The National Weather Service said yesterday that by the time the snow is done falling this morning, 1 to 2 inches is expected in Newtown, Crosby, and Kenmare. Many other cities, including Minot and Devil's Lake, are expected to see less than an inch. North Dakota, friends over there, brothers and sisters, if you can pray a snow barrier between you and Minnesota, I would certainly appreciate it here in Minneapolis. More to come here on Faith Radio. Good mornings.
To boldly go where no one has gone before.
And of course, that intro music signifies that Ruth Kramer of Mission Network News is going to be joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings. Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine, although I have to admit for our listeners now live that you did catch me in, let's say, a bit of a fib in trying to sort of maybe heighten my ability in the track and field world. You obviously do a lot of track and field, a lot of running, and I suggested to you that over the weekend I ran the 437 seconds, but I was pretty well off base, wasn't I?
Well, you would have been, you know, like super world class, smashing all the records. Yeah. Yeah, if you're gonna do that, do it. You need to build a little more credibility into it.
Yeah, no, I gotta say my credibility's kind of shot this morning. I'll ask you some questions anyway, since you're the actual expert here. But appreciate you joining us, and there's so much to cover from a standpoint of the global headlines and the impact that we as Christians can feel from them. And we'll start with the situation out of Indonesia and what's happening there, and obviously just such difficult, destructive events. So talk us through what's going on in that neck of the woods.
Well, yeah, there was a 7.5 magnitude earthquake that struck the island of Sulawesi, which is, if you look at the archipelago, it's sort of like the central island chain of all of the islands that make up Indonesia. And Palu is kind of a bay area right off the strait. So it's sort of an area that is considered to be a very touristy area. It has very nice weather typically. But when this quake hit, it created a tsunami, and it just swept into this area, which is actually kind of a tourist area. It's a destination place because of the beauty and its location by the waterfront. And it really did kind of take out the city of Palu. A lot of the things that are coming out since the disaster occurred on Friday are still being assessed. A lot of the damages are that you're actually seeing. Right now, the death toll is about 830. It's likely to increase because a lot of buildings were collapsed. They are still looking for survivors, and that's really not going well. part of the issue that is leading to not being able to find people quickly is because the city doesn't have any heavy equipment to move the debris around. They don't really have much of anything. The ability to get over to this area they're kind of cut off now. And so there has to be some infrastructure restored, roads restored, bridges restored in order to be able to get help over to the people who survived the crisis. Obviously, that means that there's no power, there's no fresh water, there's no running water in the area. It's going to be very difficult to get supplies in, because what you have to do is either take them in by water or you have to take them in by air. So you got a lot of first aid relief that's trying to figure out how to make this work in a not very big area. And they're still in that whole trying to figure out what to do at this point. The president of Indonesia, Joko Widodo, did actually go to the worst hit part of the tsunami zone on Sunday, just to see with his own eyes what actually is taking place and try to get some feel for what's happening. This area has a population of about 380,000, and he was just devastated. He's not acknowledging the challenges there, and the conditions right now are just not going to allow them to respond the way they need to respond. So they're still trying to come into play with a plan that's actually going to work. One thing I want to say that you may or may not see about this kind of a situation, this is a country that is in the Pacific Ring of Fire. So they're used to disasters. They're used to having things like this. And they're trying to take steps to give more warning so you don't have the scope of devastation in terms of loss of life that you do. And you may have heard since the last earthquake, like a couple of weeks ago, that there was talk about putting in an early warning system for the tsunami, a new detection system that was going to give a lot more warning time for things like this. That system was supposed to have been put in place last month, I think, but because of the economic crisis where you had a currency devaluation, they didn't have enough funding to put it in place, so it actually wasn't in place. So there's just tragedy on top of tragedy. One thing I want to say here, though, is that Sulawesi, especially the northern part of the island, is known for its Christian population. So you do have a lot of believers who are there. You do have people who have already been through crisis and know how to respond to crisis. We spoke with one of our partners on the ground, Forgotten Missionaries International, and they have a large network in Indonesia. Most of the church planters are in Kalimantan, which is just across the strait, and they didn't feel any of the damages from the impact of the quake or the tsunami, but they are able to cross and get things into some of those areas by water if they can actually get the clearance to do that kind of thing. So they're kind of looking for ways to partner with the churches. Partner with the churches that are in Sulawesi in the northern part, and start getting a chain of supplies going. This is still in the assessment phase, but there are Christians and individuals who will be involved with the rescue efforts. Indonesian partners can funnel all of the designated financial assistance to those who are directly involved in the relief work. That's according to our partner, FMI. I'm sure that there are other Christian agencies that are going to be there. I know that Voice of the Martyrs is out there. I know Open Doors is out there. So, you know, when you're looking for ways to come alongside and walk life in a post-crisis kind of thing, go with organizations who have proven a track record of being able to do this and do it well and that are already established. This is not the time when you want to try to be establishing the organization and figuring out how this chain is actually going to work and trying to connect your network. These networks are already established. They're already well-known. They're already trusted. So, you know, as we're looking at a lot of the different opportunities in the near future, pray for the believers who are looking for ways to serve their countrymen in the name of Christ. That's really what they're all about right now. And it's not going to be a thing where I will only give you aid supplies if you listen to the gospel first. It's not like that at all. When you have these believers who are on the ground, they are mourning with those who've lost everything. They are rejoicing with those who've survived and found loved ones. They are acting in the names of Christ, and they're the hands and feet of Jesus Christ when they're doing this. They are merely trying to get supplies out there into people's hands and say, if you need help, let us know. We will do what we can to help you. And because they have a different approach to everything when they're dealing with aid in these networks, people say, why are you helping me? and it opens the door for a conversation about the hope that they have in Jesus Christ. You know, and it's not a thing where they're doing like a Romans Road kind of thing. They're just telling their Jesus stories, and it makes a difference because they're already living out Christ in front of people, and they're already different. The southern part of Sulawesi is where you've seen a lot of the heavy Muslim activity, where you've had some issues where there's been persecution. So when you have a disaster and you have a lot of movement of people and you had displacement and you get this mix of things that are coming across, and someone's acting differently from a preconceived notion, you're just different from what they were expecting, and they ask you about that, there's a reason for the hope that you have. And you have that opportunity to share the story of why you wake up and your worldview is different. So just be praying for those believers who are looking for ways, getting things organized, getting in there. They're going to need help. They're going to need funding. And pray for the wisdom of the government leaders as they prioritize the needs and the responses. Just there's a lot to do in the days ahead, and the government is already dealing with another disaster from an earthquake that was several weeks ago on a different island. So they're being spread kind of thin right now.
It's Ruth Kramer of Mission Network News talking us through what's happening in Indonesia, but not just the events there, but how we as believers can help. So helpful, Ruth. And when we come back from break, I'd love to get your perspective as we change our topic over to Turkey and President Erdogan and what's happening with Pastor Andrew Brunson as he's going to court next, from what I understand. So we'll cover that next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 9 minutes before the top of the hour, and you are listening to Faith Radio Mornings, where I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, and joined on the line by Ruth Kramer of Mission Network News. We're talking about some of the headlines around the globe that impact us as believers. And Ruth, I remember back to our very first conversation when I took over this role of host, and you brought up this pastor in Turkey that, frankly, I hadn't heard of before, Andrew Brunson. But as I've been involved with the show, this is such a compelling and interesting story that really has led to some pretty big tensions between the United States and Turkey about this ongoing imprisonment. So some updates I know happened over the last weekend or so, and why don't you talk us through what's going on?
Yeah, I'm not sure how far back we need to, spell out what's been going on, because I also have found that people in church don't really know who Andrew Brunson is. They're not really following the situation because as a whole, it's not getting a lot of headlines. It's not getting a lot of media attention. So Andrew Brunson is an American pastor who has been pastoring a church in Turkey for the last 20 years. And in the wake of the 2016 coup attempt, the president, Recep Erdogan, kind of took emergency control over the government because he was trying to put down the coup and trying to establish some stability in the government. But he also took that opportunity to kind of silence all of the opposition. And he's taken a lot of power in under it's kind of moving away from presidency and moving into something else where the power is consolidated. And it's going to be a difficult situation to reverse. That being said, as he's silencing his enemies, he's looking for any connections to make the charges stick. And in this case, Andrew Brunson was arrested in October of 2016 and charged with terrorism and espionage that could result in like a 35-year prison sentence if he's convicted. The situation being that he's accused of links to the organization behind the coup attempt and to connections with the Kurdish insurgent organization terror group called the PKK, and connections to a cleric that is thought to have been the mastermind behind the coup, Gulen Fatan, and he's supposed to he's the Muslim cleric that is actually in the U.S. in exile. And so what Turkey wants is for the U.S. to hand over this cleric, and then they'll release Brunson. And because the cleric isn't actually hasn't done anything in the U.S. and he's not in custody because he's not a terror risk for the U.S., the U.S. hasn't handed him over. So Turkey's playing hardball with this, and they're using Andrew Brunson as a political pawn. This has actually resulted in a lot of increasing measures to put pressure on the Turkish government to release Andrew Brunson. And it's not just the U.S., but it is obviously primarily the U.S. So you're dealing with Congress now. You're dealing with military stuff now. You're dealing with sanction issues. And it's just put a lot of pressure on Turkey to release Andrew Brunson. Now, this situation, you would think would, you know, that the Turkish government would be looking for a way to save face and to be able to kind of normalize relations. And so they've dragged things out. There's been continuing stays on, I should say extensions. There have been continuing extensions on the trials that have actually made it to court. In the last round of court action, the courts decided to allow Andrew Brunson to serve out his detention at home. So he is at home with an ankle monitor. That is a movement in the right direction, but he's still not free to leave his home. He's still not free to leave Turkey, obviously. He's still facing state charges. The next trial will be October 12th. So there's going to be a lot of focus going on, you know, on what's going to be happening with that, because there are a lot of rumors that maybe the pressure has built up to the point where Turkey will just close the case and release Andrew Brunson and acquit him of all charges, because the charges themselves are tissue thin. The accusations, the accusers are fabricated. It's obvious they're fabricated. The judges have indicated that they realize that this doesn't make a lot of sense. The lawyers are saying they realize it's fabricated, and the frustration is they keep holding Andrew Brunson. Now, the latest situation over the weekend was that the Turkish president claimed that he didn't have the power to release Andrew Brunson. He says it's really the court's decision. He was claiming that he doesn't have the right to order Andrew Brunson's release. So he's kind of throwing it back into a court situation to try to, you know, in a bid for time. But that doesn't really match the political reality, because after his most recent re-election, he also undertook some sweeping powers that gave him the right to do just that. He has the right to make any decision to pardon anybody, because there are no more checks and balances that are available right now in the Turkish executive branch. The judicial system is under a lot of pressure right now from the executive branch. So there's just some confusion as to what actually is going to happen. Basically, what people are saying here is keep praying, because it's so wild and woolly in Turkey. You really can't depend on anything. You cannot depend on the things that you're hearing in rumors, because at the last second, a backdoor deal can fall apart.
Yeah. You know, it's an incredible update, Ruth, that you're providing there, and I know lots to come with that. We are out of time. We got to run, but we love that you come on the air with us for Mission Network News and talk about these headlines.
Hi, I'm Dick Whitworth, General Manager of Faith Radio. We heard from Mary during our fall share, and she said this: I am just overflowing with joy from listening to Faith Radio's programming. Thank you, Mary, and thank you, friends, for making her story possible through your prayers and generous support. If you would still like to give a gift to Fall Share, you can through our website, myfaithradio.com. Thank you, and God bless you.
Have you ever wished you could listen to your favorite radio program when you wanted to? That way you'd never miss a program you really wanted to hear, simply because your program came on when you had an appointment, you were at work, or something urgent came up. Well, you can listen to your favorite programs whenever you want. Download the Faith Radio app by searching Faith Radio in the Apple Store or Google Play Store. Podcasts of your favorite program are now available on iTunes and Google Play Music app. Search and subscribe to your favorite program and listen anytime.
Appreciate both the national news and the global news from Brandon Showalter and Ruth Kramer. Up next is Dr. Linda Mental, and we'll talk about being calm in the midst of storms.